Scientists, musicians, economists, and writers make up this year's MacArthur Fellow recipients, also referred to as the Genius Grant. One of those geniuses is Reginald Dwayne Betts, a celebrated poet and lawyer from Suitland, Maryland. But before he was known as all of those things, Betts was a 16-year-old boy serving time in prison for carjacking. And it was during his time in prison that someone slipped a book under his door. It was The Black Poets, and the contents of that book blew his mind. Betts went on to serve 8 years in prison, and now, more than 20 years later, he's offering inmates that same experience by establishing micro-libraries in prisons throughout the country through his nonprofit, Freedom Reads. And Reginald Dwayne Betts, who goes by Dwayne, joins us now. Welcome to Here and Now, and congrats on becoming a 2021 MacArthur Fellow.
Yeah, now it's pretty surreal. I should never say this, but it's about as surreal as ended up in prison.
Oh, yeah. You're still trying to wrap your head around it.
Yeah, because, you know, I mean, in both cases, I think that I had sort of intentionally done some things that would lead to what followed. And in, at least in the former, in terms of prison, I should have expected that kind of outcome after prison, you know, deciding to be a writer while inside and writing. Nothing really prepares you for this. And so it's still surreal. It's like just as surreal as I think the experience of ended up in prison.
I mean, that's really powerful, Dwayne. Take us back to that moment when that book was slipped under your prison cell door. What was it about that book that shifted your perspective, specifically about poetry?
I think the truth is that you ask somebody for a book and you don't see who gives it to you. And it's the last thing you expect to find in a prison, you know, black poets. And then I read this cat named Etheridge Knight, and he's writing about a 16-year-old in prison. I felt so lonely and alone in a cell. And then I'm reading poetry from decades before where somebody has saw me. And I just thought, I don't know, it was a wonder in being able to do something like this. And so in that moment, you have to name yourself something, right? And I spent a lot of time in prison trying to name myself something. And it was that moment that I decided to name myself Poet, because I believed it would give me a way to hold on to something in the world.
While you were reading, you were thinking, I am a poet. You hadn't even started writing poetry yet.
Yeah, no, I hadn't started writing poetry at all. I think if I would have known how difficult it was, I might have said, nah, I'll just be a reader of poetry. But literally, I was just like, just a thing. And it was as absurd in a way, right? But it's like when you watch basketball or football or tennis for the first time as a kid and you say, I want to do that. Yeah. I was reading this, and Lucille Clifton had a poem about cutting kale. You know, it was about cutting greens, and my mom cut greens, and it ended with I sensed the bond of living things everywhere, and I felt so desperately alone. And I'm reading these lines, thinking, I think I could do that.
What were those first attempts like to write poetry, and what were some of the things you were writing about? Do you remember?
Oh yeah, I was writing about depression. I was writing about the people around me. Wrote a few love poems. But the one I remember most, though, actually, and it's ironic now given what's going on, is I wrote a poem, and it was the first time I wrote something that I thought was really good, and it was about the desperation to become anything. And I said something like, it doesn't matter what I do when I get out, because nobody who really needs to see it will ever know. And part of me saying that was that people in prison don't know what's going on the outside, not really. And you never... I was young. I didn't believe that the stories of people who served time made it back to prisons. And I was lamenting the fact that, like, I was being formed and shaped and becoming something in these cells. And that even if I'm successful, even if I make a way, that the people who I think should see it won't. Which means I was both remarkably naive and also arrogant. Like, so I'm going to do something. Right. If somebody will get a chance to see it, but they won't, you know.
Right. But you know what you're saying here? It sounds kind of like freedom, because you have freedom over your thoughts and what you write on the page. And I'm struck by your organization being called Freedom Reads. I mean, I'm guessing it's for that exact reason. Can you elaborate on how reading and writing for you can feel like freedom?
Yeah, not just feel like freedom. I'll tell like a quick story. A friend of mine asked me if you could sue McDonald's if you like slip and fall, and they got the wet floor sign up. And of course, I tell them, yes, you could sue McDonald's. If it was their fault, the floor was wet, you slipped, you hurt yourself. And then he pulls out a book, a tort book, and it explains how I was wrong. And my response to that was to take a paralegal course. And I didn't really take the paralegal course because I wanted to be a lawyer. I just took the paralegal course because I wanted to know and understand why I was wrong in this particular situation. A couple years later, I helped somebody write a habeas corpus petition. It was a clerical error that would have ended up having them serve an additional 5 years in prison. As a lawyer, I've helped get friends out by writing, you know, parole packets, by contributing letters to clemency petitions, by using what I've learned as a writer and as a speaker to argue for their freedom. And so I think in a real way, freedom begins with a book. The reason why I was able to engage in those ways was because I had spent all of this time literally just reading books, imagining that it wasn't just a fanciful place that they were taking me, but I was learning something about being in the world that I didn't fully know. Because if I would have known it at 16, I wouldn't have carjacked somebody.
I'm really tripped out that your journey into law began with your friend asking you, can you sue McDonald's?
Yeah, I know, right? It's so funny because I am endlessly grateful for the way in which we teased each other in meaningful ways.
Well, you graduated from Yale Law School and was sworn into the Connecticut Bar a few years ago. And you call yourself a lawyer poet versus a lawyer and a poet. I think this is what you're getting at here. But why the distinction, and how does that play out in the work that you do?
I mean, part of it is because people think that the two worlds are completely foreign. And so by saying lawyer poet, I'm using lawyer as an adjective, helping to deepen and describe the kind of poet I am. I think, but it's also this investment in language that I want to hold on to. You know, I don't want to imagine the world as separate. I want to imagine that in the same way my work as a defense attorney is meant to get people free. And as a poet, mm-hmm. my work is meant to get people free, but it's meant to be a truth teller. And I think a poet's job is to always tell the truth.
I'm thinking back to 16-year-old Dwayne. And I'm also thinking about the work that you did right after you got out of prison. You worked at this bookstore in Maryland. And it was there that you started this book club for African-American boys. How did that book club come about? And what surprises did you learn from that experience about maybe perhaps the power of intervention through the written word?
Well, I had two groups. And so I had 6 to 11-year-olds, and then I had 12 to 18-year-olds. For the older group, I mean, I remember we read Fences. I mean, we read August Wilson Fences, and I had their fathers come, and we had conversations that like I'd never had, and it was about what duty does friendship demand? Before that point, I didn't truly understand the way that books could animate the things that we were talking about, that we were going through in the world.
It took you a while, though, to publicly come into letting folks know that you had spent time in prison.
Yeah. And it did because I knew that I would be denied jobs, I would be denied opportunities, but also I was just frankly ashamed. You know, I didn't want people to know that I spent a third of my life in prison.
Dwayne, you've come up against major obstacles starting your life over after incarceration, as many felons do. Anyone who knows a felon understands this. And yet you've pushed through in ways that speak to this internal fire within you. Where does that come from?
I remember my judge, when I was sentenced, said, I am under no illusion that sending you to prison will help. But you could get something out of it if you want. And I was 5'5 and 120 pounds and hadn't won a fight since the second grade. And I was just viscerally offended by the fact that this is the only response to this thing that I had pled guilty to doing, this thing that I admitted doing, this thing that I understood that I had to be punished for in some way. And I think that what happened was what I carried into prison was a deep commitment to proving the people in that space wrong. And also, you know, to prove to my mom that I was more than that failure. And I think I don't even talk about my mom that much in interviews, but I found myself like, you know, tearing up mostly because I remember how like it's harder to watch your child be sentenced than it is to be the child and to be sentenced. And you don't really let that down. And so from challenge to challenge, and even from success to success, it's like, but that thing still happened. And so it's so like even this is just like, I am deeply grateful and happy, but it won't change the other thing. And so I'm still trying to add more to the jar to make up for the other thing, you know?
Well, I think that jar is pretty full, Dwayne Betts. Congratulations on being awarded a MacArthur Fellowship for your work as a poet, a lawyer, and the founder of Freedom Reads. And congratulations to your mom, too.
Thank you, guys. You guys have a great day. And I can't wait for my mama to hear it.